Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, Pewter Report readers, viewers, and listeners to a brand new edition of the Pewter Report podcast, energized by Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. It is day two for Pewter Report at the NFL Combine. Yesterday was focused and centered around speaking with general manager Jason Light and head coach Todd Bowles. Today, we got to talk to some of the prospects. A lot of Bucs imprints all over the place, whether it was edge rusher, linebacker, or defensive line. Those were all the positions that spoke today at the podium. And as the week goes on, there will be more and more positions that we all get to communicate with, which will be a lot of fun and very cool to get through. But our focus today, as you see on the title, is the Bucs focus on edge rushers. That was the big news yesterday, obviously, with them cutting Shaq Barrett, and we'll see where they land with an edge rusher this upcoming draft. I'm your host, Matt Matera. Joined with me starting off the show is my fellow colleague from PewterReport.com, Josh Capo. We will have a rotating cast as well, like we did on yesterday's show. But Josh, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Matt. I'm doing really well. First combine, so I was really excited to kind of get in there yesterday and today and kind of see how things work and get to talk to all sorts of people from, obviously, yesterday we would talk to the team. And then today getting to start to talk to some of these draft prospects, get to know them a little bit better, find out who's been talking to the Bucs, and start to get a little bit of a better picture of what the draft may look like in, over 1 month's time.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you saying? I can't understand you. Okay. Gotcha. There we go. So a lot of good stuff that came out from today. A couple of formal meetings with edge rushers specifically. But Josh, before we talk about kind of some of the guys that they met with, just the overall outlook of outside linebacker with the Buccaneers, what they have currently at the moment and how much that can change from now until, I guess, the end of next season and looking at the year after too.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, with Shaq Barrett's release yesterday, the Bucs lack a true alpha number one edge rusher.
Yeah.
And that's got to be what they look to improve. Todd Bowles spoke kind of quite a bit about how the team needs to improve their four-man pass rush. Mm-hmm. He felt like the team was able to get a decent pass rush when he would bring the blitz, five or more rushers. And that really bared out in the statistics. I think with a blitz, the team was able to get pressure about 40% of the time last year.
Yeah.
Under a four-man rush, I think it was more like 27% of the time. And that's a stark difference. And if you're constantly sending more than four guys, you're leaving the back end of the field open to be exploited. And that did happen from time to time throughout the 2023 season. JTS isn't that guy. Anthony Nelson's not that guy. Maybe Yaya Diaby can be that guy in time. I personally don't think that's quite his ceiling. I think he can be a quality number two, and he obviously had a great rookie season. Marquise Watts showed some juice in very, very limited reps. And what was interesting was Jason Light talked quite a bit about Jose Ramirez, who never even saw the field last year, but played a lot with the team on their practice squad. But out of those guys, I don't see anybody who's that true alpha one. So the team needs to find that. Could they find it in this draft? Picking 26 overall, there are some guys that I like. There's definitely projection there, right? It's not a slam dunk when you're picking 26th overall, but it certainly could be a position that they target at the end of the first round.
By the way, Pewter people, we will be doing a roll call today at 4:20, right around that time. So stay tuned for that. But Josh, I'm absolutely with you. As much as we love Yaya Diaby, he's more of, I think, the Robin to a Batman, right, type of pass rusher. And that's not a bad thing by any means. I mean, we saw the dynamic duo that won the Super Bowl with Shaq Barrett and JPP. And if Yaya Diaby has to play that secondary role at outside linebacker, there's still plenty of room for everybody to thrive in Todd Bowles' type of defense. This is a video that we didn't play from yesterday's podcast that we'll play right now of Bowles kind of sharing some of his frustration with the lack of production from a four-man pass rush. So by default, he got to blitz Antoine Winfield Jr. all the time, but that kind of worked out for Antoine.
A little bit. Obviously, Yaya had a great year for rookie. We're looking forward to him taking an even bigger step next year. But we have some young guys, Marquise Watts, Jose Ramirez, who was awesome for us in practice all year. We talked to the tackles about how good he was, a bit of a look, you know, team player he was, but he was actually giving them trouble most of the year, which was a good thing. It's not speaking poorly on them, but that's good of what Jose was doing. So I'm very excited about that. We've got Anthony Nelson, obviously. We do have a good young group there. Obviously, we're always trying to add.
I was frustrated with the four-man pressure. The pressure that we give when we go five or more is outstanding. Now, we missed some, but we fell off of them. But the four-man pressure at times was a little stale and had too much time to throw the football, and that stands with a lot of big plays as well as the secondary.
Well, to be fair, Tom, you don't have Myles Garrett and Khalil Mack and the Boses. So you got to be inventive a little bit.
This game is not fair. You always have to be inventive. You always have to be inventive, but you don't want to pressure all the time. You want to be just as dangerous with a four-man rush than you do with five or more. So we want to shore that part of it up. And some of it was getting out of our pass rush lane. Some of it, we're max protecting with everybody in there. Some of it, we got to cover better in the back end. But the four-man pressure has got to be better. The pressure we create, we can get to, and I'm very confident in that at all times, but we got to be better at four man. Well, the good thing is all of them played. You know, we don't have anybody that's going to play for the first time. Even Watts played some snaps. Yaya played a ton of snaps. Joe played a ton of snaps. Nelson played a ton of snaps. Cam played a ton of snaps. So we got guys that played, always looking for pass rushes. You never turn them down, but we're confident in the guys we have.
We'll talk more about edge rusher and outside linebacker in just a moment, but we have a super chat from Mark Fisher, a.k.a. Rev Fish. And you know our rule, pewter people, you super chat us. Doesn't really matter what the topic is. We get to it as soon as we possibly can. So thank you, Rev Fish, for the $9.99 super chat, who says, Bowles may still be on the warm seat, and without Baker and Evans, he's set to fail. How much influence does he have on personnel? Do they follow him, listen, but do their own thing, or what? What do you know about that dynamic? And then he follows up with the $1.99 super chat, dynamic between Bowles, Glazers, and Jason Light. Well, obviously there's fluidity and continuity with the discussions for really every single player. Now, obviously, you're going to see Todd Bowles bang the table a little bit more for defensive players, because you have to remember, Todd comes from that defensive background, being the defensive coordinator for the Bucs and then getting that head coaching job. So does he have his eye on, you know, safeties and edge rushers and defensive linemen a little bit more than the offensive line or really any other offensive position? Yeah, I would say so to a degree. But Bowles also was very articulate yesterday when talking about the tight end room and how they can improve as blockers overall, and you know, how he wants to see a better run game. Because I can promise you this, Todd Bowles is not happy that the Bucs were once again dead last in the run game and rushing yards per game last season for 2 years in a row. So there's always going to be those discussions. And it's no different than any other team, really, where the GM might fight for a guy, the head coach might fight for a guy. And that's kind of why I asked Jason Light as well yesterday, when he was up at the big podium, about how vocal Liam Cohen has been, because obviously Cohen's going to be running the show on the offensive side, very much like how Dave Canales ran the show for the Bucs offense last season. And Todd was one of the first guys to say, or when he was asked about it, that, oh, I'm going to let the offensive coordinator run his system and do his thing. Will I have input in certain places? Yes, but I'm not going to, you know, baby him and hold his hand the whole time. And I think that's kind of important to let his coaches, whether it's the OC, whether it's the positional coach on defense, to kind of let them breathe a little bit and craft things in their own way. So Todd's not going to have no say at all on offense, but you know, Liam Cohen's opinion on certain players may hold a little more value specifically at, say, running back or wide receiver versus how Todd views an outside linebacker.
Yeah, and I think overall, when you hear this staff talk, when you hear Jason Light talk, when you hear Todd Bowles talk, you almost never hear them speak out of step from each other. When you talk about, and I'll kind of take it to a different perspective, when they're talking about which internal free agents they want to re-sign, the ones that they're vocal about, they both talked about the same guys. They both didn't talk about the same guys unless prompted. And I think that's very telling. So you can tell that this brain trust is basically on the same page. And then I think that goes back to Jason Light. Light, over the course of his tenure, has really proven that he wants to work with his head coach to deliver players that will be successful within that coach's system and within those coordinator systems.
Yeah.
He's a very collaborative general manager when it comes to personnel decisions and making sure that he's giving the ingredients for that coach to be successful. So I think that there's a good cohesion there overall, especially when it comes to personnel decisions.
Absolutely. So let's get back to outside linebacker, and we'll talk about D-line and the linebackers as well who spoke at the combine today. But the official list of formal interviews and informal interviews with the Buccaneers, you can check this all out on PeterReport.com as well. But there were some players that had formal interviews with the Bucs and confirmed by us asking them. UCLA edge rusher Leiatu Latu, still kind of working on perfectly pronouncing his name. A couple Penn State edge rushers, Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson, and Western Michigan edge Marshawn Neyland. A couple informal interviews include Florida State edge rusher Jared Verse, Kansas edge Austin Booker, Gabriel Murphy, Xavier Thomas, Muhammad Kamara, who played at Colorado State, where Shaq Barrett played at, David Uguegbu, and UConn edge rusher Eric Watts, who I enjoyed speaking with him today. He was quite vocal and very interesting to speak with. But let's talk about some of the formal interview guys, Josh, starting with Latu. Now, obviously, we saw him at the Senior Bowl. He comes from UCLA, like we just mentioned. Obviously, very, very quick. But I can't get out of my head. I'm curious to get your opinion about this because I haven't really discussed it with you. There's obviously a lot of talent there. The speed I mentioned, pretty lanky, had a good swim move, especially at the Senior Bowl. But I look at him, and he's kind of a string bean to me when I see him. And I don't know. I do wonder going up against like a bigger sized offensive tackle if a couple of the initial moves don't work out, if he can kind of hold his own against those guys.
Yeah. I want to say he weighed in around, 260 at the Senior Bowl. So he certainly has the size overall. I think that string bean look comes from because he is a bit on the longer side, especially with his arms. But he plays with a decent amount, I'd say a good amount of speed to power, and he plays with enough strength and anchor that I don't think that that would necessarily be an issue at the next level. What I think is going to be very interesting, and it's a piece of the information that I won't say unfortunately, but the media doesn't really get a look at medicals. And I think that that's really the big thing that's going to be the difference between whether Latu will be there at 26 when the Bucs are picking or not. If his medicals completely check out, and if I remember correctly, he even said that no team has really asked him about his injury history. Mm-hmm. Because if I remember, like, he actually had to retire at one point in his college career.
Pretty wild. Right?
Due to injuries, but came back, and he's had two really good years under his belt without any injury issues. But if those medicals check out, I don't see him falling to 26. He may not even be an option for the Bucs. Now, if there are some red flags, that could cause his draft stock within the league to fall. And then he would be there for Tampa Bay to decide whether at pick 26, are those injury risks worth it for the talent that they're getting? Because he was an extremely productive edge rusher at UCLA.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no question about it. And to his credit, he did do very, very well at the Senior Bowl. We wrote about him a fair amount during that time as well. Another guy that has kind of fluctuated up and down the rounds and the first round as well is Chop Robinson, and I know I've heard you speak about him. You are not the biggest fan of Chop.
Yeah, not that I think that he's terrible or anything like that. He's just not going to be
awful.
Yeah, just awful. That's exactly what it is. No, I don't think he's going to be quite as high on my draft board as maybe some other ones out there. And as a matter of fact, out of the two Penn State edge rushers who had formals, I think I'm leaning, I'd have to recheck my board, but I may have Adisa Isaac ahead of him. Chop has a ton of, he's a real high motor, ton of burst. He plays with his hair on fire. I just don't know if the ceiling is quite there to where if he doesn't absolutely get to that ceiling or say like a 90th percentile outcome for his talent level, that he's going to be that impactful edge, where I think there are a lot of other guys, Adisa Isaac included, where just their physical traits give them a much higher ceiling, which means they don't have to necessarily come as close to maxing out their potential to be as productive as Chop. And that's my opinion there.
Yeah, and the scouting report on him, the first thing that kind of everyone points to is the crazy amount of athleticism that he has. And that's always fun to see, but that doesn't necessarily kind of paint the whole picture for certain edge rushers for sure. Yaya Diaby was a guy that I think had a good combo of having a high motor for sure, but was also kind of like built and chiseled the right way. So I think for him, it's going to kind of come down to, just the fundamentals more than anything else. And it's funny because I was talking to Chop Robinson today, and he said that the Buccaneers were the first team that he spoke to at the combine this week. And, we were talking earlier about also with Fox Sports, Greg Allman, who covers the NFC South. We were kind of talking about and joking somewhat about the pipeline that the Bucs have to certain schools, with Auburn for sure, with Washington, absolutely, over the jinx, Josh, over the past couple of seasons. But let's not forget that Penn State was a bit of a pipeline for the Buccaneers for a little bit as well. I mean, Chris Godwin is still there. Donovan Smith was drafted. The Bucs did not draft Carl Nassib, but brought in Carl Nassib and ended up being a team captain for the Buccaneers. So definitely a school, and it's not like Jason Light's going, oh my God, Penn State, like we have to put them on our radar, put them on our draft board. But it is funny kind of seeing those similarities from time to time and at certain positions. The other formal interview with the Buccaneers, again, from Western Michigan, was edge rusher Marshawn Neyland. What do you know about him? Anything particular that you're a fan of or not a fan of?
Yeah, so I got to talk to him, and I will say I think Neyland is somebody that Bucs fans really need to put on their radar. Mm-hmm. Not just the formal interview, but he really showed out at the Senior Bowl. He kind of put himself on the map there. He's 6'3". I want to say he's like over 268, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So he's big. He starts with power, and he works off of it. And he has flashed or shown sustained ability to do almost every type of pass rush move you would want. So he can run a spin. He can hit the corner with bend. He will do a cross chop. He loves to do a push pull. So he loves to dictate terms to offensive linemen. He's a good run defender. Western Michigan used him in a lot of ways that Todd Bowles is probably looking at and saying, we do that. We do that. They stood him up in the A gaps. And he's a physical presence, and then he's also a presence in the interview room. So, like when I got to talk to him, he's very engaging. He's very charismatic. You can tell he's got a lot of confidence without being too brash that you're like, I don't want to be around this guy. He knows himself. He's very genuine. And I think that would shine through in a formal interview that he had with the Bucs and probably with a lot of teams.
Yeah, we've seen in the past these informal interviews and informal and just putting your face in front of the coaching staffs and front offices. Sometimes, not with every player, but sometimes that makes or breaks a talent. Who's the guy from Florida? Polite, I believe his last name was. He was a guy that had like terrible interviews with the coaching staff. So lo and behold, the Jets drafted him and it never worked out. So, just certain things can really make a big difference. Let's get back to the Super Chats. Thanks to Paul Bowen for this $4.99 Super Chat, who says, do y'all think we could get one of the free agent running backs like Derrick Henry or Saquon Barkley would be nice to pair with White, with one of those big guys. Jason Light kind of spelled it yesterday when it comes to just free agency in general, as Bailey Adams is giving a thumbs down. this free agency, it's actually a question that you asked Josh yesterday to Jason Light. It was a wonderful question and probably an even better response was, what is the strength of the free agent class? Because right. A lot of times GMs will get asked, like, what's the strength of a position group in the NFL draft? So I like the little take on it, looking at free agency. And Jason's response, and obviously not going verbatim here, given the Spark Notes, you can read the article on pewreport.com, is that they're going to be focusing on just re-signing their own guys. So we talked a ton about Baker and Mike Evans and Antoine Winfield Jr. The list goes on and on and on, except for Devin White. So with their focus on just re-signing their own guys, Chase Edmonds might be one of those re-signings because obviously he comes on the cheap and is way less inexpensive. But as far as the star players like Derrick Henry, who I would not even think about going near, and Saquon, who's going to be way too much money, I think that's just a little bit out of the price range for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But we do have another super chat, which kind of leads us perfectly into our roll call as well.
Oh, yeah.
Bucks Basement with a $2 super chat. Thank you. Says this team can do better than the 26th ranked head coach. So, yeah, there's a big story that came out today. Anonymous polls by every team across the league about facilities, the coach, a number of different topics. And on roll call today, you know what? Let's put up that graphic. That's right. It's time for roll call. Where are you at, Peter people? For those that are new to roll call, the way that this works is you should do it on Mondays, but a different week. So we're going to do it today. Josh is about to go on a rant about your Buccaneers, with this one being about the grades that came out for the Bucs in their facility. And while Josh is talking about your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if you want to start putting in the putting in the chat the location of where you're watching the show from, we will put it up on the screen and give a shout out to a bunch of our fans because we love the Pewter people. We love interacting with everybody. So without further ado, Josh, take it away.
Yeah, so the NFL Players Association does an anonymous survey of players across the NFL every year. It's usually done at the beginning of the season. And what they're doing is they ask the players to rank, not rank, but to give a letter grade to their own team that they play for in 11 different areas. This is treatment of families, food and cafeteria, nutritionist and dietitian, locker room, training staff, weight room, strength coaches, team travel, head coach, and ownership. And based on those respondents, and this year they got 1,706 respondents, so it's a large sample size, they give out team report cards. Well, your Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they placed 24th overall. Now, there were 100 NFL teams, that'd be a pretty good ranking. There are only 32 teams, so they finished just outside of the bottom quarter of the league. And that, honestly, for an organization that wants to be great, that's not great. It's just not. And three areas in particular, they ranked really bad in. Treatment of families was an F. That's unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's just the best word that you can say. Unacceptable. Team travel, another F. 32nd overall. They were the worst team in terms of how their players viewed the way they handled team travel in the entire league. And then ownership got a D minus, 29th overall. Now, some of the things that the players mentioned gave them these low grades. As far as the treatment of families, they don't have, or at least at the beginning of the year, they did not have a family room to provide to families to hang out in during games and practices and things like that. It's an easy fix and one that they can certainly afford being a part of a multi-billion dollar industry. And how's this? For a family that is worth billions, that owns a team that is worth billions, they charge their players $90 per child for daycare on game day. That's just ridiculous. That is a cost of doing business. That is the cost of being a good organization. It's just unacceptable. The next one where they ranked really low on was ownership. And that really came down to a perception from the players. They don't feel that club owner Joel Glazer is willing to invest in the team facilities. And that's why they got a D minus, which was 29th overall. And then for team travel, this is a team that puts their players in the back of the plane in the smaller seats. These are typically bigger people, while the team staff ends up at the front in the first class areas. And then if you are not a starter and you have less than 4 years of playing time, the team's going to charge you $1,750 if you want your own room when you're traveling. This is cheaping out on very small things that can just make your players feel better about the trials and tribulations of going through a very long season. So it's ridiculous. It's easily fixable. It's something that the team should look at. They should listen to their players, mm-hmm. and they should make some upgrades.
Yeah, so a couple of things to consider, though. The Chiefs also got, I think they got an F as well. Yeah, as he says, didn't Clark Hunt
he absolutely
get, an F minus, which, you know, is interesting. Obviously, this is a team that's built success over the past couple of seasons, including going back-to-back as Super Bowl champions. Also, Jordana Barrett, the wife of Shaq Barrett, clearly did not have to go out of her way to support the Bucs, especially after they just released Shaq Barrett. But she had a comment that she said she also filled out
the survey
and was very surprised by some of the grades that the Bucs got, because she said that they treated them with nothing but, you know, kindness and exceptional qualities. So just a couple of things to take in mind. This is anonymous. Would be curious to see some of the other Bucs players' opinions about it. And that's also why I didn't go to the NFL, was for the childcare.
That is true.
Costs for my fictional children.
And I think the important thing here, and we're going to do a little line switch here, yeah. but I'll finish up with, I'm not saying these correlate to success. Obviously, the Chiefs rankings show that that's not the case. There's a much higher correlation between the skill of your quarterback and success than necessarily providing free daycare.
Yeah.
This is something that every NFL team should do, and many aren't, the Bucs included, and it needs to change.
One thing that doesn't need to change, though, is the greatness of Celsius Energy Drinks, which is the official energy drink of the Pewter Report podcast. We got to talk about their newest flavor of Celsius, which is the Celsius Essentials, their newest line, I should say. It's over 270 milligrams of caffeine. So we're talking about the tall boys that Celsius is bringing. They got great flavors like the Blue Crush and the Dragonberry. So whether it's the Celsius Essentials or maybe some of the old school flavors of Celsius, the sparkling watermelon, Fuji apple pear, and the tropical vibe, or the sparkling orange, the sparkling watermelon. If you need to know where to find a Celsius energy drink, that's when you punch in your location on the store locator for Celsius, and I'll tell you the closest place where you can find a Celsius energy drink. We're doing it right now in Indianapolis at the Combine. Could be a local convenience store, a 7-Eleven, a health and fitness store, or it could just be your
bodega.
And once you keep going to your bodega and you're like, I really enjoy this, but I want more. I want to get it in bulk. You can get it in bulk. Go to Amazon. Get that variety pack, because variety is the spice of life, and you can have it sent to your place of residence really whenever you want. You're in charge. You're the captain now. Just make sure you're drinking Celsius energy drinks. Make Celsius your number one pick. Celsius, the official energy drink of PewterReport.com. All right. Joining the show now is going to be Scott Reynolds and Adam Sly Slavon.
What's up, Pewter people? Well, this was an interesting day because you saw on the graphic that when you look at Darius Robinson, he's a player that certainly would seem to fit what the Buccaneers want to do
yeah.
in terms of being a defensive end with some size, with some athletic ability. We'll see exactly how athletic he is tomorrow during the actual combine testing. Today was just for interviews with the media, and they did those interviews with the teams last night. But interestingly enough, Darius Robinson was not one of those players that were interviewed. I asked him specifically if he interviewed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, either as a formal or an informal. And you would think that with a great showing at the Senior Bowl and the damage that he did against Kentucky with two sacks of Devin Leary there, that Liam Cohen would know this guy pretty intimately. But no interview at all. And you can read the tracker that we posted in the Pewter Report's TV comments here on our Pewter Report podcast. So you can check out those comments there. But this is a big, massive 6'5" guy, 290 pounds, great athleticism, chiseled physique.
Yeah.
Really had a similar track to Yaya Diaby in having a breakout year during his senior year, Sly.
Yeah, definitely. And it is surprising because you look at Darius Robinson and you can see the talent. It's on display. We saw it at the Senior Bowl. And it's interesting. It makes you kind of wonder, do the Bucs, are they prioritizing getting an outside linebacker over maybe somebody that profiles more as a defensive lineman? And if that's the case, do they not want to invest a first-round pick in another defensive lineman, having taken Kalijah Kancey last year, Logan Hall the year before? Are their eyes maybe more on replacing Shaq Barrett and getting that premium pass rusher?
Yeah, that's a good question. The interesting thing, too, is remember, there was a guy named Kalijah Kancey out of Pittsburgh who kept everything quiet with the Buccaneers. No interviews at the combine with Kalijah Kancey for Tampa Bay. No top 30 visit, yet he was their first-round pick. So maybe the Buccaneers are going to be down low and incognito again this year and go with a guy like Darius Robinson, who did not interview with the Buccaneers at the combine. And we'll see if he goes on a top 30 visit. But he does seem to fit. When you look at the athletic linemen that the Buccaneers have drafted, dating back to Jotron Cuenca, Logan Hall, Kalijah Kancey, Yaya Diaby, those are some guys that really have the speed, the power. And I think Darius Robinson is going to show that this week when it comes to the NFL scouting combine testing. And we'll see if that's the case. And we'll see if this is a smokescreen like it was with Kalijah Kancey.
Yeah, for sure. One guy I really want to talk about, mentioned a little bit earlier, Liotu Latu, the UCLA edge rusher, and had a chance to ask him today if he formally met with the Bucs, which he did. And the production is off the charts. The past 2 years at UCLA, he had 23.5 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, even added 2 interceptions last year. And even though he's 260 pounds, I think he has really good bend. And he would be another Washington Husky that would join the Buccaneers.
Right.
He played with Kate Otten and Joe Tryon-Shanka in 2019. And he mentioned JTS a couple of times when I was talking to him and how he was his boy in Washington and also his big bro. And it would be inspiring to play alongside him. Do you think, Scott, that Latu is someone that would fall to 26, maybe based on his medicals? And how do you see him maybe fitting in with the Bucs?
I think the only way he falls is if for some reason he doesn't test well athletically. If he's just a production guy, more on effort and technique and skill rather than pure athleticism. So I wouldn't necessarily rule it out, especially since he has a medical issue too. Now, the problem with that medical issue, it's not a problem for him, is he had 2 very healthy seasons at UCLA. But as was mentioned earlier on the podcast, he basically had to retire and he finally found the team that would clear him medically. And so he went ahead and did that and transferred from Washington, where he suffered a neck injury and basically played 2019 and then did not play in 2020 or 2021, went to UCLA and started those last 2 seasons. As you mentioned, 10.5 sacks during his junior season and then his senior season last year, just a menace out there in the Pac-12 with 13 sacks. So a double-digit sacker typically with the production that he has against quality opponents. These are guys that, you know, he's chasing after Bo Nix, Michael Penix, for example, going up against some really good Pac-12 teams. The Pac-12 is now defunct, but man, it went out with the bang because this was a really good conference last year. Utah in the mix. Colorado had a little bit of a resurgence with Deion Sanders. Now they're in the Big 12. But for the last hurrah, it was Liotu Latu's season out there, man. He had a really good year. He's a player that if you're Tampa Bay, if he checks out medically, checks out athletically, and happens to fall there at 26, I don't think he's going to, but he certainly would be a really good option. One of the players that we had in our mock draft with going to the Buccaneers in the second round was Adisa Isaac, and he did, in fact, meet with the Buccaneers as a formal visit. I like Isaac's production, and I like him better than Chop Robinson, who also met with the Buccaneers from a formal perspective. The thing with Isaac, the 7.5 sacks, the 16 tackles for loss, he's a finisher, and I think that's probably the one biggest difference I saw on tape between Chop Robinson who might even be a bit better athletically than Adisa Isaac. But Adisa Isaac is no slouch. The get off is there, the burst. I think that he is a more physical tackler. I think he's a more explosive player in terms of his power, speed, power, and he's a finisher. I just saw too many instances where Chop Robinson had the opportunities for sacks, had the opportunities for tackles for loss, and fell off. And that was exactly the terminology that Todd Bowles used in the clip that Matt played earlier, I believe, or maybe it was yesterday, where he said, we had guys there with our four-man rush, but they fell off, meaning they had the sack there, and it didn't happen. And who could he be talking about?
Yeah, I wonder.
Joe Tryon-Shoyinka, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think they want to go down that road of drafting an athlete that plays football. I think they're looking for a football player. And this is a guy that didn't have the acclaim and the hype that Chop Robinson had last year, heading into last season. But he outperformed in terms of tackles for loss and sacks. He was more of a playmaker. And I think that he's someone in the mix for the Buccaneers. We had a chance to talk with Chris Braswell. And if you remember, he was the first round draft pick in our initial mock back in January, the Alabama star. The way this turned behind Dallas Turner.
Yep.
And some guy named Will Anderson Jr.
Wanted to say one more thing on Isaac. You mentioned him, and he's a more realistic option for the Bucs because you look at guys like Jared Verse, Dallas Turner, even Latu. Those guys probably aren't going to be on the board at 26. Maybe even Chop Robinson's gone. But with Isaac, he looks like a realistic option. If not in the first round, maybe they trade back. Maybe he's a guy on the board in the second round. And same thing with Braswell. Even though we had him in the mock draft in the first round, at this point, kind of more of a second round guy. But he did mention that he also spoke with the Bucs. He didn't say whether it was formal or informal.
Yeah.
But just based on the pedigree of playing at Alabama under Nick Saban, playing alongside some of the most premier pass rushing prospects that have come out in the NFL in the past couple of seasons.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like with Braswell,
sure.
And he has the production to match.
Yeah, he does. He didn't wow me at the Senior Bowl. I thought he would show a little bit better there than he did. But I will say, Adisa Isaac, I thought, had his moments there and probably outshined him a little bit. But Braswell and Adisa Isaac are going to be there. They're going to be options for the Buccaneers at 26, where if this team decides to trade down or out of the first round and into the second round, that would certainly be a possibility there. It was interesting to note when you look at the combine interviews today, and the guys talked about the edge rushers a little bit. There were four guys that had formal interviews, and maybe it was five. Chris Braswell wasn't sure if he had an informal or a formal, so we're not going to call it a formal because we just don't know the answer to that question. But there were a couple of other players that did have formal interviews with the Buccaneers, and there were four defensive tackles. Now, this is a pretty deep defensive tackle draft. It's not crazy good. There are some really good players that will be drafted in the first round. The Buccaneers, though, with Kalijah Kancey, with Vita Vea, with Logan Hall, trying to still squeeze the production out of their top pick at the top of the second round in the 2022 draft, I don't see them using a premium pick on a defensive tackle, but there are a couple things to consider.
Yeah.
Hall really has not blossomed yet. He hasn't lived up to that high draft pick billing. And then Will Golston probably won't be back at age 32. Greg Gaines is a free agent. I thought he played well, but there's no certainty that he comes back. But Vita Vea, still a really good player, keeps advancing in age, though, and that's a position that I don't think that you want to have lacking talent. And there's a couple guys that were mentioned. Braden Fisk from Florida State's one of those guys that had a formal interview. And there's a couple other guys as well. Any of these guys strike you as a Buccaneer fit?
For me, Braden Fisk, he fits the bill and being a leader. That was something that Jared Verse said today. And you see it on tape. He is a very physical player up front. I think that he would be a great fit. Someone I'm curious about and looking forward to watching more film of is Chris Jenkins.
Yeah.
I think he could be another really good fit. What are your thoughts on that, Scott?
Yeah, I think the thing with Chris Jenkins is he's a Michigan Wolverine. So that's certainly going to appeal to a certain John Spytek, who also is a Wolverine. But all biases aside, I'm not sure if Jenkins is going to be there. I think that he has a shot at being a late first, early second round pick. And by the time Tampa Bay gets on the clock at the end of the second round or near the end, I think Jenkins might be gone by then. But there's a couple other guys, though, that they did interview that at least they'll have a shot at getting in the second or third round. I'm not advocating the Buccaneers drafting a defensive tackle in the second round. But sometimes the best player available wins out. And this is a position, too, that when Kalijah Kancey was injured at the beginning of the season, you know, slowed down his development, et cetera. You know, Vita Vea has missed some time, although he was healthier last year than he has been in years past. But you have to win in the trenches. So restocking and reloading defensive tackle, interior offensive line, I've got no problems with that at any point in time in the draft. But there's a couple of players that really piqued my interest, aside from Braden Fisk and Chris Jenkins. These two guys got formal interviews. Rook Ororo, and I know that sounds like Scooby-Doo, but it's Ororo. That is his name. That's how you pronounce it. I looked it up. Yeah, Ororo. But he's hell on wheels, man. This is a player that is very quick, agile, strong. And the thing I like about him that when I looked at some tape on him today, the change of direction ability, the agility, the once you get upfield and if you could run past the quarterback, can you put your foot in the ground, wheel around, turn the corner at full speed and stay in pursuit? That was really the biggest knockout in Gerald McCoy.
Yeah.
Is if he went by the quarterback, it's over for him. He does not have the ability to redirect. And that's what made Warren Sapp so special. That agility to be able to redirect at a moment's notice. The play is not dead. He is still in pursuit and can make those plays. I'm not saying this guy is anywhere close to Warren Sapp by any means. But what I will say is he certainly is a player that I think could be a third or fourth round draft pick option. The other guy that was I'm kind of new to a little bit, McKinley Jackson from Texas A&M. Big guy, 333 pounds, but very agile for his size. Probably, again, a mid-round draft pick, looking third, fourth, fifth round. But that's probably where this team would want to draft the defensive lineman rather than doing it in with those premium picks.
And it's interesting with Jackson being 333 pounds, the Bucs with their top picks the past two seasons, they've trended towards getting more athletic defensive linemen, guys who are less than 300 pounds and have that ability, like you said, to redirect and get after the quarterback. Kind of switching the tempo, talking about inside linebackers who can maybe get after the quarterback. They were also there at the NFL Combine today. One guy that I spoke with was Cedric Gray, someone that we saw at the Senior Bowl. And talking with him, it sounds like he really wants to play with Lavonte David. He said that David is a legend in the game. And based on Todd Bowles and Jason Light's comments about Devin White being all but gone, Cedric Gray could be somebody maybe in like round three or four, kind of along the lines of a defensive lineman. Maybe not the most pressing need, but you want to address it sooner rather than later. And adding somebody else into the mix along with Servassier Dennis and KJ Britt that can maybe come in and be a starter.
Yeah, I agree. There was a couple of players, an inside linebacker that the Buccaneers did have those formal interviews with. And again, we put the list of all of the players that interviewed in the chat, so you can check that out. It's also on pewterreport.com. It's our Bucs 2024 Combine Tracker, Combine Interview Tracker, and it's been updated. So you can check that out every day, because tomorrow we've got a really good show for you as well, where we're going to be focused on the players they're going to be talking about. And of course, that is safeties, cornerbacks, and tight ends. That's right. The Buccaneers, well, you got an Auburn Tiger there. Why not, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's worked out.
Jalen Simpson, he really caught your eye at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah, and his ability to I remember there was one play. The ball was near the ground. He made like a shoestring catch. And just his ability to have concentration. And he also sounds like a Todd Bowles defensive back with a high football IQ, the ability to communicate, and having kind of the production at Auburn to back it up. So, I mean, DBs could be another case. Carlton Davis, another Auburn guy. He might be on his way out. So why not replace him with another Auburn defensive back? And then as well as that tight ends, I know your boy Ben Sinnott.
That's right.
He's going to be there. So
that's going to be the show tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Jalen Simpson, by the way, 4 interceptions last year at Auburn, including a pick six. He also had a total of 14 career pass breakups, but 7 career interceptions. Jalen Simpson. We've seen that pipeline Auburn with KJ Britt, Jamel Dean, Carlton Davis. Could Jalen Simpson be the next guy? We'll also talk about the tight ends. So cornerbacks, safeties, tight ends tomorrow at 4 o'clock here on the Peter Report podcast, as well as the latest Bucs news, of course. So we're still keeping an eye on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and still have a lot of great content about the Buccaneers. I know some of you might not be huge draft Knicks. You're like, I'll dial into these players once they're actually Tampa Bay Buccaneers in late April, once they're drafted, and that's fine. But we're going to have a mix of draft content and Bucs content this week, all week long on PeterReport.com. So there's something for everybody as the podcast rolls on here. The other players that they had a chance to interview formally at the linebacker position, Nathaniel Watson. This is a really interesting guy.
Stat sheet stuffer.
Stat sheet stuffer, yes. He certainly has the tackle totals. He's got the sacks. He fits the bill on paper when it comes to what Todd Bowles likes to do. You look at the fact that he had 6 sacks in 2022 and 10 sacks in 2023, and you might think, wow, okay, this is a Servasio Dennis kind of guy. Blitzer, yeah. You know, a guy that's he's a bigger linebacker, probably is going to check in around 245 pounds, 6'2", more in that J.J. Russell, actually more like K.J. Britt probably, even yep. bigger, right? A bigger linebacker. But here's kind of the damning thing about him. He had 137 tackles this year during his senior season. Sounds great. That's a great number. He had 35 solo tackles. So out of those 137, 35 were solo. How many assists, Sly?
102.
That's right, 102. So not exactly the guy that takes on the play, kind of finishes it, but, you know, he's not really the starter.
At 245 pounds, you don't want to see your linebacker assisting on tackles. You want to see him, like, being a thumper.
Absolutely.
Bringing that power. So yeah, that is a concern, but 10 sacks, I mean, you take that from inside linebacker, that's like edge production.
Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, if you're looking for a guy to replace Devin White and do what White did best, which is go downhill, this might be the guy. But I think KJ Britt can do that. I think KJ Britt is a downhill guy. I really think they need more of a cover guy. And that's why I think Cedric Gray from North Carolina might be a better fit out of some of these players that interviewed. The other player that interviewed is Michigan inside linebacker Junior Colson. Those three players, Colson, Watson, and Gray, got the formal interviews. There's several players you can look at the list, a couple guys that stand out to me. Texas A&M inside linebacker Edrian Cooper, Michael Barrett, Michigan linebacker from Tampa, and Peyton Wilson from North Carolina State, who, if he checks out medically, he really fits that profile. The guy can cover, he can sack the quarterback on blitzes, and man, he is blazing fast.
I'd argue that if you disregard his medical history, that's the best linebacker prospect in the NFL draft this year. Just his size, his speed. The comparison to he sees himself kind of modeling Luke Kuechly, and you can kind of see that a little bit in this game. And Peyton Wilson, I know you talked to him extensively at the Senior Bowl. He really was a stud throughout the week, and he's just blazing quick. He's faster than some of the wide receivers that were there. I think he was at like 22 miles per hour based on the tracking. So really excited to see him and how he does this week.
I agree. And I think, too, he's a guy that athletically looks the part. I think he's going to kill it in terms of the 40-yard dash and some of these athletic events. It's just going to be the medical with him.
Yeah.
If he gets a clean bill of health, he's had shoulder injuries. He's had 2 ACLs. You never want to see a linebacker with shoulder injuries.
No.
Right? Especially when it caused him to miss most of one of his seasons. I think it was junior season. Now, he had a bounce back. Senior season was phenomenal. Checked all the boxes statistically. But how bad is the shoulder injury? Shoulder injuries and linebackers don't make for long healthy careers. They make for injury-riddled careers, unfortunately. But this Peyton Wilson guy, he's somebody to watch maybe for Tampa Bay. But again, the Buccaneers, though, they're losing Devin White. They want another body. They have Servasio Dennis in the hopper.
Yep.
I think KJ Britt is the starter right now, penciled in next to Levante David, assuming Levante comes back. And you have J.J. Russell in the hopper. So it's not like the cupboard is bare there.
Yeah.
And I like what I saw from KJ Britt and JJ Russell down the stretch last year.
Yeah, for sure. Thought KJ Britt did better than pretty much anyone thought. And he was an upgrade over Devin White after Devin White got benched. And then also JJ Russell. I thought he had a really great preseason, and then he backed that up. He started a game and even got a sack. So he kind of has that all-around versatility at the inside linebacker position. And then Servacio Dennis, as well, you mentioned, he also got most of the snaps in one of the games, and he fared quite well. I remember there was one play, it was like a 4th and 1. Mm-hmm. Everybody read the blitz wrong, yeah, but him, and he was the one that was able to go downfield and get the tackle.
That's right. We have a super chat here. Sorry for getting to it late, from Tate Miller, $4.99. We appreciate that very much. Would Audric Estime be a fit for the Bucs offense? That's the Notre Dame running back, kind of a big back. And I had a chance to talk to one of the Notre Dame linebackers today about him, and he was pretty enthusiastic. He said this guy is a load, but also has some really good speed. He's a player that has always been fast, that just kind of kept gaining some size and some weight. If you like LeGarrette Blount, you might like Audric Estime. This guy likes to hurdle people, and he's pretty good at it. You can't watch the highlight reels without seeing about 3 or 4 hurdles in there, and that takes a pretty athletic dude as a bigger body to be able to do that. So it speaks to his athleticism. Like all running backs, the 40-yard dash time will be indicative of where he's going to get drafted. But as we've seen in the past, it's not about the 40 time when it comes to running backs, because you're not going to have those 50, 60, 70-yard breakaway runs. You're not going to have those huge alleyways with the wide side of the field in college football.
Yeah.
There really isn't that wide side of the field in the NFL. The hash marks are more towards the middle of the field. So what does that mean? That means you got to be able to slip tackles and break tackles. And so tackle breaking, elusiveness, short area quickness, agility, strength, good stiff arm, those are more important than breakaway speed when it comes to NFL running backs.
Yeah, and I think you've seen that in the NFL in recent years with Derrick Henry. Not somebody known for blazing speed, but hey, he's going to make you miss. He's going to make 5 guys miss. And when you
talk, run you over.
Yeah, he's going to make you run. He's going to run you over or use a stiff arm. And I like the LeGarrette Blount throwback for Bucs fans. Yeah. And I think a power back is the guy that the Bucs should target, whether it was a guy mentioned or somebody like Braylon Allen. Like just that downfield thumper, kind of like the inside linebacker position. You need that thumper in the running back room. And maybe Sean Tucker, if he continues to develop in his second season. But, man, in this draft class, there are some options at the running back position.
I love me some big backs, man. I mean, growing up, I was first as a young child a Washington Redskins fan. John Riggins was one of my idols, the Diesel. Then I moved to Kansas City, where you had the Nigerian nightmare, Christian Okoye, one of the biggest running backs of all time. So I love big running backs. Then I come to Tampa. I'm down here a year in 1995. All of a sudden, 1996, in the second round, they draft this kid out of Purdue. What was his name? Mike Allstott.
Ooh, yeah.
The A-Train. Yeah, another big back. So then you replace Mike Allstott a couple years later. You get LeGarrette Blount, then Leonard Fournette. So I like bigger running backs. As long as they can have that elusiveness and tackle breaking ability. Sometimes those bigger backs, they present themselves as bigger targets, easier to tackle as a result, and sometimes more prone to injury. But Audric Estime is legit. I like him. I think he's a really good back. Ray Davis, I know, is one of the backs that the Buccaneers like from Kentucky. I just don't know, with Rashad White having that 990-yard season, 500 yards receiving, I know they need another running back, and that's something Todd Bowles has talked about and Jason Light's talked about. But when you look at bringing back Chase Edmonds, I think that might be something they're interested in. Still need another guy.
Yeah.
Keyshawn Vaughn is gone, thankfully. Sean Tucker, jury's still out for sure. Didn't really get a big vote of confidence from Jason Light when he was asked about Sean Tucker the other day.
Yeah, he said he has to take a big step up, and he spent most of the season inactive. Even spent some time on the practice squad. So he does have another step to take. Obviously, the physical ability, you like to see it. At Syracuse, he did really well, and he would have been like a 4th or 5th round draft pick.
Yeah.
But he didn't really show too much throughout the rookie season, and couldn't unseat Keyshawn Vaughn until he was released.
I think that with needs on the interior offensive line, with needing another edge rusher, maybe adding another defensive tackle, it seems like that's something they want to do. Maybe getting another inside linebacker somewhere in the middle of the rounds, maybe day 3, that they go with a day 3 running back, or maybe another undrafted free agent. Running backs typically just slide down. We've seen the value plummet for a lot of running backs. A lot of the running backs that they're bigger names, I think they're going to have a hard time finding a lot of big money out there. It just doesn't make sense. The Buccaneers invested $7 million a year in Leonard Fournette. It was a bad investment.
Yeah.
And I think that Jason Light's been burned with a couple of big running back contracts. That one and Doug Martin at the very beginning of his career. I want to say in 2016, a couple of years after he was general manager of the Buccaneers. So I don't think Jason Light wants to really pay more than what he paid Chase Edmonds last year in free agency. And, you know, you've seen him draft running backs, mostly in the third round. I know Rojo was a second round pick, but yep. Charles Sims, Rashad White, Keyshawn Vaughn, third round. I think with more pressing needs, though, it's going to slide those running backs down into day three.
Now, you talk about pressing needs, and you mentioned the interior offensive line. So I want to pose this question to you. If the Bucs are at 26, right, mm-hmm. and Jackson Powers Johnson or Grant Barton are there, mm-hmm. and then you also have edge rushers, let's say Latu or Dallas Turner or whoever is there, which position do you think the Bucs should target with that first-round pick?
Looking at what Jason Light has done, I would say he's going to go with the edge rusher. You look at Joe Tryon, Shawinka, and the fact that they put a first-round draft pick in him. Jason Light has found some success in the second and third rounds with offensive linemen. Most notably, second-rounders like Donovan Smith, Ali Marpet, Cody Mauch as early as last year.
Luke Getteke
in the second round, Robert Hainsey in the third round, Alex Kapp in the third round. So I think based upon his draft history, I could see edge rusher first round and then having the second or third rounds be around to get an interior offensive line. I think they're going to go get an offensive lineman in free agency, a value type guy, maybe no more than $7, $8 million a year, and then draft either a center or a guard, the opposite, right, in the draft. And so I don't think they want to have their interior offensive line be rookie, second-year player,
right?
Meaning Cody Mauch. I think they'd like to have rookie, second-year player, and then a veteran in the mix, whether it's at left guard or whether it's at center.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And looking at free agency, and especially the center position, there are quite a few options for the Bucs to consider. Yep. You have guys like Aaron Brewer, Brian Allen was recently released by the Rams, has that Liam Cohen familiarity, and then Tyler Biadasz from the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll talk about the offensive line later in the week. Tomorrow, just a reminder, we've got cornerbacks, safeties, and tight ends in the mix. Those are going to be the players on tap tomorrow for us to interview. So make sure that you check out Pewter Report podcast tomorrow at 4 o'clock right here on Pewter Report TV. And we also want to let you know that if you are in dire need of a house or maybe you want to sell your house, well, there's one guy that can help you do it. He's got a team of people. Matter of fact, his wife, Caitlin, will help you as well. Eric and Caitlin Gross, the Eric Gross Group, they're the official realtor of Pewter Report. You can check them out on housesinfla.com. You can also follow them on social media, Facebook and Instagram, at Eric Gross Group. And also, give Eric a call. His number is 513-907-4271. Talk a little draft. Talk some Tampa Bay football if you want. He's a huge Pewter Report reader, an avid fan. And whether it's you're in the market to buy your home or buy a home or sell your home, Eric Gross and the Eric Gross Group, they're the number one draft pick for you, folks. They're the official realtor of Pewter Report. Make sure you visit housesinfla.com. You're going to be able to find all of their open houses and their inventory on the website. It's a great website and a fantastic partner here at Pewter Report. Appreciate the contributions today from Adam Slavon and also from Josh Capo. We're joined now one more time by Matt Matera. Matt, we've had a pretty eventful time here.
Yes, we have.
At Indianapolis, and we're getting ready to embark on yet another show tomorrow talking about some defensive backs and some tight ends.
Yeah, going to be a really fun time. Obviously, tight end is a position that Todd Bowles and Jason Light both spoke about. I think we're both in agreement. Could use a little tweak or adjustment there. Will it come through the draft? Will it come through free agency, maybe finding a veteran that might have a little familiarity with Liam Cohen. Yeah. That remains to be seen. So make sure you check out all of our work at pewterreport.com. We got some great videos about certain defensive tackles from today, giving shout outs to both current and former Buccaneers. Yeah. You can check out our YouTube as well, where you can find that content that will be posted shortly after this podcast. So make sure you follow us on all of our social media on X, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads at Pewter Report. And then our YouTube channel, of course, Pewter Report TV. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. And when this episode is done, leave a comment in it after. It helps with our algorithm. Could be anything. I like this draft pick. Bucks should take this prospect. Or simply go Bucks works as well. So still a lot of great stuff to see from the combine. Pewter Report has it all covered for all the positions, who we think is a fit for the Buccaneers, and a lot of great stuff in between. So for all the Pewter Report staff, for Scott Reynolds, I'm Matt Matera saying thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you tomorrow at 4 p.m. for another edition of the Pewter Report podcast.